Welcome to the Dynasty Pulse Podcast. Your hosts, Nick Wagner and Joshua Johnson, have been described as not blowhards. Join them as they discuss the matters at the heart of the Dynasty community. From rookie advice to trade analysis, plant your flag here. This is the Dynasty Pulse, presented by DynastyFootballWarehouse.com.
Welcome to the Dynasty Pulse Podcast. I'm your host, Joshua Johnson. With me, as always, is Nick. Hail to the Redskins Wagner. Nick, what's up, buddy?
Oh, not much, Josh. I'm doing pretty good, but I do need to take a second to complain about the Hall of Fame finalists real quick. I mean, come on, Brian Dawkins and John Lynch, but no Steve Atwater. Terrell Davis, but no Roger Craig. Jerry Jones, but not Jimmy Johnson. Jason Taylor, but no Clay Matthews. If I live to 100, I'll never understand the thinking behind some of the votes for Hall of Fame. How are you doing, Josh?
Oh, okay. I must have missed that. What was Atwater in or no?
No, Atwater is not one of this year's 15 finalists.
Oh, so we get a pitch.
I don't
about
understand
that
how. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, wow. Okay. That's strange. Anyway, I want to wish a happy birthday to Baltimore Ravens safety Eric Weddle and Carolina safety Michael Griffin. They both turned 32 today. I every time before we start the podcast, it's usually nobody of note. But today it was, so I just I throw that out there. We got a great show planned for today. Obviously, we were off last week because of the Christmas break. We're going to kind of recap week 16 and 17, look at some possible off-season waiver stashes. Just, I know you probably don't have the opportunity to stash anybody, but just to let you know, some names that we did are considered. Got a great dynasty dilemma. We're calling it the broken leg dynasty dilemma as we look at Derek Carr versus Marcus Mariota. Dynasty trade analysis. Trades are happening once again. Got a prospect watch as we took a look at a couple later round quarterbacks in C.J. Beathard and Seth Russell, although after the way Beathard played against Florida, I don't know if he's going to get drafted at all. Bringing the number series back since we're in the offseason, a little fun thing we like to do is take a look at some of the best players who wore the numbers throughout in NFL history. We're all the way up to number 47. And that, of course, Mr. Chuck Padice is going to stop by as we do some playoff ATS picks. So pretty excited about that. We'll take a look at the Connor Cook versus Brock Osweiler battle in Houston. Should be an interesting showdown there. Moving forward, Nick, what were some of your thoughts here on Week 16 and Week 17?
Well, as far as Week 17, it was a pretty one of the least exciting Week 17s I can remember. Pretty sure there was only one game with a win and you're in and lose and you're out of the playoff situation. That was, of course, the Washington game where they lost. So that made the Sunday night game far less dramatic with Green Bay and Detroit both already clinched in the playoffs. Really, the only other meaningful game was in the AFC where Kansas City clinched their first round bye with their win and the Raiders' loss. But, you know, fantasy championships were Week 16. So switching to that, any owner who stacked Aaron Rodgers and Jordy Nelson was definitely happy as those two were the number three and four scorers of the week. Personally, I rode David Johnson and Antonio Brown, both of whom are great nearly every week, and then Doug Baldwin, who seems to save his best games for the fantasy playoffs to a win, even though I had down games from Cam Newton and DeMarco Murray. Travis Kelce and Charles Clay led the tight ends in Week 16, while Russell Wilson, Tyrod Taylor, Kirk Cousins, and Colin Kaepernick joined Aaron Rodgers in the top five quarterbacks of the week. But nobody had a better fantasy championship game than Minnesota wide receiver Adam Thielen. 12 catches on 15 targets, 2 touchdowns, and over 200 yards. It's going to be very interesting to see how his role in the offense progresses with Stephon Diggs and also the first-round pick Laquon Treadwell around. Although, to be fair, Treadwell but did next to nothing as a rookie. But anyway, it'll be very interesting to see Adam Thielen next year.
I think he is somewhat of a restricted free agent, I think is what they call that. So Minnesota can put a round value on him. I think that's the case. I should know because I listen to my buddy Andy Carlson's Purple for the Win podcast. He talks about that all the time. They're big fans of Thielen, a nice small, cool kid, small school kid who's come through in a big way for them. Certainly should have a role there, as we don't know what Treadwell is going to give that team moving forward. Obviously, you know, rookie year, hopefully it was a redshirt year, as he only had one catch on just three targets, inactive most of the year, but hopefully Thielen can come through. Excuse me. Chip Kelly gets the axe. Seems like a foregone conclusion, but was 1 year really fair? I mean, San Francisco's going into year four now with new coach, and coincidentally, if they've won week one all the last three times, I wonder when the last team a team has done that. But I don't know what exactly that was about, but there's a lot of things not going in the right direction there in San Francisco. I would argue that they're more of a dysfunctional franchise than anybody else in the NFL. I mean, we know what Cleveland gave us this year. I don't think it was part of their plans to win too many games this year, and obviously they just had the one. But I think they have a master plan. Cleveland or Buffalo and San Francisco just have no idea what's going on. The Rex Ryan situation was really weird. I've heard a little bit about it here and there. Just, I don't know, wasn't he only there 2 years? I think you got to give an NFL coach 3 years. I'm going to say that every time Black Monday rolls around, but you have to give an NFL coach at least 3 years, I think, to really implement their system with guys that they know that can be successful. That's exactly why a team like New England is successful. I mean, they're able to year in and year out draft players, not because they're the best at their position, but they're the best at what they can do, and they use them to their strengths. And if you got to give a coach time to assemble pieces like that. Oh, why was David Johnson playing in Week 17? Obviously, it sounds like he avoided a major catastrophe with just an MCL sprain, but did not like seeing that. I don't own him on a dynasty league, and my redraft team where I had him was far gone by the time he got hurt, but you never want to see that to one of the premier players in the NFL. I know, Nick, that probably got you pretty nervous about his future, but sounds like he avoided catastrophe, but no reason he should have been playing in that meaningless game. Give your backup some reps. See what you got in those guys. Let's not get overly excited about players like Alex Collins, who played San Francisco and had 7 carries for 55 yards, and Corey Grant, who had a hell of a game to end his and the season there for Jacksonville. Was Week 17. They played the 49ers and Colts, respectively. Two very not good defenses to begin with. Probably some guys that were rolling out some rookies there as well. So don't get too overly excited about that. Next, a question that we had in our Q&A last week about Tariq Hill. I know you're a big fan, but honestly, how do you feel about his future? I feel like it's going to be either one or two ways. He's either going to be Percy Harvin or the next Darren Sproles. What do you think?
Well, he's 5'10", 185 pounds, and more wide receiver than running back, in my opinion. So I'm not really a fan of the Darren Sproles comparison, just because he's so much taller and, you know, totally different body shape. You know, the Percy Harvin thing, you know, maybe. I think maybe Tyreek Hill is what some of us thought Percy would eventually evolve into after his rookie season, but Percy Harvin never did take that next step, whereas, you know, Tyreek Hill already seems like he's one of the most electrifying players in the league. So I think he's already surpassed what Percy Harvin was able to accomplish. But, yeah, I really like him moving forward, definitely.
Okay. Well, you know, and I do feel like, and I bring the Percy Harvin comparison up because I feel like Harvin was good, but then he had some concussion issues. He had some other injuries. And it seems like when guys like this, those burners like this, when they get injured, it kind of leads to more injuries. You know, their body's trying to overcompensate for what not. And I just feel like it's a bad situation. You know, he's doing great, but teams are going to figure out how to cast a net and not let him break through. And I just feel like he's going to get popped on one of these kick returns. Obviously, I do not wish anybody any ill will, but I just feel like that type of player doesn't have a long shelf life in the NFL. And you have to be very, very special, like a Darren Sproles. I mean, Sproles, you know, announced he's going to retire after the end of next year. He's been doing it for a decade. And yeah, he's not a league leader in receiving yards or whatever every year, but he does do that kick return thing. He's a phenomenal third down back. And to do that and I think I brought up the Sproles comparison because I think him and Hill kind of around the same type of touch, you know, radius per game. Is that's how they try to use Hill. I mean, Hill's not a guy that's gonna carry 10 times or get 10 targets in a game, but he's certainly a guy that they use to their full advantage. And obviously, as a Raiders fan, I'm a little bit jealous that the Chiefs got Mr. Tyreek Hill, but that doesn't go into this conversation at all. Before we move on, I wanted to say a couple thanks. I meant to thank one of the guys here on staff, Luke Grilly, who has the Never Ending Glory podcast. They are also here on the website. I got a T-shirt from the Never Ending Glory podcast for like submitting a question or something like that. So I wanted to thank Luke for the T-shirt. It's a phenomenal T-shirt. It's got a big Buckeye vodka there sure on the back of it. So I do appreciate that. I did not get any Buckeye vodka. I'm still waiting for that, Luke. But I just wanted to say thank you for that. And I also wanted to say a big thanks to Chad Greenway. It looks like he's probably going to retire. Played all of his career with the Minnesota Vikings. Of course, went to the University of Iowa. And he is also a guy from my home state of South Dakota. Not only was he a phenomenal player, but just an upstanding citizen off the field as well. And I just think it's so great that he is from South Dakota. And he's was such a great role model during his time plays. I just wanted to say a big thanks to Chad Greenway for being such a great role model and showing what kind of a person somebody from South Dakota could be. So I just want to say a big thanks to both Chad and Luke. So thank you guys. Any waiver stashes you did here for the off season there, Nick?
Well, I didn't really have a lot of room on most of my teams to do any, but there is one guy I'll mention. You said earlier, Alex Collins, not to get too excited about him, but I think he's definitely worth a stash, especially as poorly as Thomas Rawls has played this year. I think there will be a pretty good competition there for the running back timeshare in Seattle next preseason.
I certainly like him more than the other guy, Corey Grant. I don't know. It looks like a RBBC just catastrophe there next year. I think they'll probably play the hot hand, and who knows who's going to get the carries. So if you could trade Alex Smith, I would certainly mention. But, yeah, he's available. He certainly isn't a bad stash. I just don't want people to get too worked up about him. And I own a couple copies of myself. I just don't want people to get too worked up about it. What about Ryan Grant? I've taken Ryan Grant over Corey Grant. What do you think about the Redskins' Ryan Grant? If Garcon and D-Jax leave this offseason and they don't draft a wide receiver high, Grant certainly has an opportunity to carve out a niche with Doxson and Crowder, don't you think?
Oh, most certainly. And, you know, like you mentioned, a lot of things have to fall into place. Both the two starting receivers leaving in free agency would definitely have to happen for him to have any sort of impact. But if that does happen, you know, we haven't seen Josh Doxson on the field yet, so we don't know what he's going to offer. So that would leave Jamison Crowder is pretty much the only experienced wide receiver there in Washington with Ryan Grant. So, yeah, the opportunity could be there. But, you know, obviously a lot of things have to fall into place.
Yeah, and he kind of had a downtick in targets this year. I think he was inactive, a little bit dinged up most of the year. But he's a player out of Tulane. I've liked what I've seen out of him in the small sample size. Another guy I keep talking about here and there is Eric Swoop, the Antonio Gates-type project there, converted basketball player from Miami. Never played the game until he came to the NFL, so that's an interesting part of his game there. But he's essentially the backup tight end now. Was like the third string tight end behind Doyle and Dwayne Allen. Now Doyle is a free agent. I would be surprised if the Colts retain him. I mean, obviously, I never know what that Colts team is going to do, so they could pay him a bunch of money. But I feel like their money's best served elsewhere. And since they already gave Dwayne Allen a big contract, it might be kind of hard for them to lock up Doyle, especially because Doyle had a career year in a contract year. So I feel like he's going to be chasing money to wherever he can get it. That means Swoop remains as the number two, and we know Dwayne Allen's health hasn't always been the greatest. And where Dwayne Allen is certainly that in-line blocker. Swoop is definitely, like I said, that former basketball background, a guy that can stretch the field vertically. You look at, you know, his stats aren't amazing this year, but even the games where he had one catch, they're like for 15 and 22 yards. He had one game where he had one catch for 45 yards. So he's a guy that can stretch the field. He's, maybe a Martellus Bennett type, maybe not as a strong blocker as Bennett, but certainly a guy with a bunch of shorter wide receivers on this team that could help Andrew Luck out of the middle of the field. So he's a guy that I like to stash. What do you think? I'm trying to figure out this tight end situation in Denver. It seems like for the last 3 years, ever since Julius Thomas left there, Nick, what do you think? What do you think about AJ Jerby, a guy they traded for from New England, versus Jeff Howerman, who Jerby looked like he was going to be coming through towards the end of the year, and he had some good weeks there, but then Howerman kind of ended as the top target getter for the tight ends there in Denver the last couple weeks. Any thoughts about those guys versus each other going into the next year?
I think I'd probably prefer Powerman. He missed his whole rookie season, so this was year two, and they always say year three is the big breakout year for tight ends. So the fact that he was already leading the team in targets, like you said, that would lead me to be pretty optimistic, I think, with Howerman.
Yeah, and just so we're clear, leading tight ends in targets there towards the end of the season for Denver. But just a couple names to look at there. So let's get to our dynasty dilemma. Like I said, we're going to talk about a couple guys that unfortunately broke their legs week 16. They're not a good Christmas Eve in my household. I mean, the kids had fun, but not a fun time. Just since I thought we were, you know, Nick's obviously a big fan of Mariota, as am I, and I'm the Derek Carr, the Raiders guy. I just thought we'd take a look at both of these guys and see what the future holds for them. I actually had the chance to go first, and I like to thought I would talk against my Raiders, so I chose Marcus Mariota over Derek Carr here. So let's play the music, and I'll get to that. Derek Carr versus Marcus Mariota. I had Marcus Mariota. So what if Derek Carr is just a facilitator, Nick, in a great offense with high-grade weapons, especially on the outside, not to mention his phenomenal offensive line? Okay, maybe that's not true, and we can certainly agree with that after watching Week 17. But I think we can agree Carr is probably in a better situation right now. Their O-line is stout, but they are also older, with a medium age of 28.2. Meanwhile, the Titans' offensive line is younger, with younger group on the rise with a medium age of 25.2. The big key here is the fact that the Oakland tackles, Austin Howard and Donald Penn, are 29 and 33, respectively. Meanwhile, Tennessee's tackles, Jack Conklin and Taylor Wan, are 22 and 25, respectively. It was very apparent Week 17 what Mariota and Carr mean to their respective franchises. Carr has exceptional weapons, but Reggie McKenzie will have to continue to hit on players to keep that offense clicking. Yet the real issue, I feel like, in Oakland is their defense, and I would not be surprised to see Oakland spend their money in free agency and early draft capital on their D the next couple of seasons. Meanwhile, the Titans have two first-round picks this season inside the top 20, with number 5 being their highest one. So their young nucleus will get even stronger. Oakland currently has a strong running game, but the leader of that pack is Latavius Murray, a free agent to be this offseason. Jalen Richard and Jerondre Washington are nice complementary pieces, but neither are between the tackle thumpers. This may seem like a good thing for the passing game of Derek Carr's future, as a multi-year 4,000-yard passer. But ultimately, the run sets up the pass. And if Oakland wants to control tempo, they will need solid running statistics from someone. Tennessee has both their future and current running backs in Derek Henry and DeMarco Murray. They have a reliable tight end in Delanie Walker, who Derek Carr would absolutely kill for in Oakland. Sure, Rashard Matthews, Kendall Wright, and Tajay Sharp are not Amari Cooper, Michael Crabtree, and Seth Roberts, but they are all human. In fact, Cooper and Crabtree, for all their shining moments, had brutal struggles this season. Did you know Matthews had 3 100-yard receiving games in the last 6 weeks, including one with backup quarterback Matt Castle? In that same span, Cooper's best receiving game was 76 yards. Crabtree's best receiving game was 90 yards. So the crafty Matthews really knows how to heat up when the moment is big. Now, both Carr and Mariota are coming off broken legs for the 2017 season. So one might think the mobile Mariota – one might think this might hurt the mobile Mariota more than it would Derek Carr. I disagree. You know how a computer or something like that is refurbished? It often is better than one that comes straight off the line. Why? Because when a refurb or rebuild is taking place, every nook and cranny is gone through to assure its stability. I feel the same will be the case for Mariota because of his mobility. Carr is more of a traditional quarterback who relies on standing tall in the pocket and delivering passes through his strong feet, and he pushes his body through passes. Mariota will be thoroughly checked, and throwing on the run puts less torque on your lower legs. He also has more of a wrist or touch passer, and that could actually help be more injury preventative throughout his career. So what do you got for us on Derek Carr there, Nick?
Well, we've seen a large enough sample from both of these young quarterbacks to know that they belong, both in the NFL and on fantasy rosters. Neither of these guys is a bust. They both should be the face of the franchise, quote-unquote, for the foreseeable future. Now, some people may prefer Mariota because of his rushing ability, and I admit that in any given week, Marcus is probably a safer play due to his rushing ability, providing a higher floor. But in dynasty format, that is precisely why I lean towards Derek Carr. Rushing quarterbacks are great short-term producers, but all those extra hits take a toll on players' bodies, and we've seen Mariota miss time in both of his seasons with injuries. And yes, Carr got hurt too this year, but as a pocket passer, he should be less likely to be hurt again. Also, we've seen many successful running quarterbacks whose games start to tank once they lose some of that speed due to age or injuries or whatever. Mike Vick's rocket arm wasn't enough to save his career once his mobility was gone, and even the great Cam Newton's passing game struggled this year, which not coincidentally coincided with Newton's lowest rushing totals of his career. But a pocket passer like Derek Carr comes with none of these concerns. Long-term, I foresee Carr having a longer, more consistent career than Marcus Mariota, and short-term, you have to like his receiving weapons better than what Mariota has to work with. Although I will fully admit, Rashard Matthews, I thought they way overpaid him. He definitely proved me wrong and had a great season there in Tennessee. But behind him, Tajay Sharp's the next guy up. Kendall Wright, who you mentioned, I believe he's a free agent. I don't know if he's going to be around. So, yeah, I can't see myself taking Mariota over Derek Carr.
Okay. Tennessee is going to take a wide receiver with one of those first-round picks. So it's going to be – maybe it's Mike Williams at 5 out of Clemson, the big giant. Maybe they take a tight end later. I really like what they have. And I think, to get to my point, if I didn't fully illustrate it, I really like Derek Carr's situation. Obviously, I'm a Raiders fan. And I feel like maybe Nick can agree, but – and I'm not trying to pump myself up, but maybe I'm a little bit more dangerous when I'm going against the Raiders, a player for the Raiders, just because I know so much about them. I think Carr's in a great situation now and for the next couple years, but Tennessee's really building something, and maybe next year, 2 years' time, they'll be right where Oakland is right now. So I feel like with the youth they have and the keep accruing these high picks, this could be a very dangerous team, and I know the shelf life of these running quarterbacks isn't as such, but I really like what they're building around him, and I think both of these in all of our dilemmas, both of these guys are very special to have, and obviously it just comes down to preference. And you know, one of the newer trends in leagues now too is that 0.25 per carry, and to have a guy like Mariota in a league like that is a nice little ace in the hole, because that is a very, very safe floor week in and week out, obviously, pending he stays upright. But we do wish both of these guys a great health moving forward, and hopefully they can return to form next year in 2017. Or in Derek Carr's case, Super Bowl, because, yeah, Connor Cook's going to get us that far. Connor Cook's going to win in New England. He's going to dispel the Tuck rule and win in New England. But anyway, any more thoughts on that that dilemma there, Nick?
No, but I'm curious. If Cook does get you to the Super Bowl, do you just ride the hot hand?
No, if Derek Carr is healthy, they will play Derek Carr. I do believe in that. But if Connor Cook gets us to the Super Bowl, we are trading his ass for a first round pick. That's what's gonna happen. sorry for the ass there, but it had to be. Let's get to some dynasty trade analysis. I'm sure we have a clip for that, but I'm not sure where it's at right now. So Nick brought up an interesting point, and I kind of thought I might do a little bit of the same. You're talking about your 12-team PPR package there, Nick. I think this isn't a league where you're back-to-back champions. You're talking about packaging all your picks together so you can jump up in the first round. Is that correct?
That's right, because mostly due to the fact that I have no roster space. There's nobody on my roster that I need to cut or that I want to cut. So, you know, no need to have four draft picks when I have only room for probably one player. So, yeah, I'm thinking package 1.12, 2.12, 3.12, and 4.12, see how high I can move up in the first round.
Okay, and you think have you had any luck with that? Do you think? I said I thought the highest you could get was probably 1.5. Maybe you can squeeze, you know, into 1.4, 1.3 if desperate in a couple of years away. Have you had any luck with that?
I have not sent out any offers yet, actually. I'm still waiting for the actual off season to roll around. But yeah, I'm hoping to get up to maybe 1.4, 1.3. You know, teams that are drafting that high are usually in full-on rebuild mode. So, you know, if they're desperate for lots of extra draft picks, hopefully that'll work in my favor.
So conservative. I guess I can't fault you for that, because this is now the second time you've mentioned that. I just don't have any room on my roster. I have all these good players. I don't have a lot of teams like that. But my one championship I did make, I did not win, but I still won $135. I was surprised that was the second place prize, which helped me pay for a couple other leagues that I lost in. So that was a nice little compliment there. But I'm in that same situation where I have, you know, 1.11, 2.11, et cetera. I already traded my fifth round pick. I was maybe thinking I could package those together there for hopefully jump up in the first round there as well. We'll see if I can pull it off. This is a ridiculously big league with five taxi spots. So it's you want to, you know, you want to have some rookies, some nice stashes. You take full advantage of that, that roster space though. So we'll see what I can pull off there. And I do want to mention, I made it that far with having Adrian Peterson as my RB2 most of the year. So that was nice. I got a lot of, production out of LeGarrette Blunt late. My other RB1 was Devontae Freeman. Bilal Powell came on at the right time. I was able to use Theo Riddick a little bit here and there. And Charles Sims when he was healthy. So just want to point that out. If you're crafty enough and have some good drafting, you don't have to necessarily have big name running backs right at the top. So moving forward, another Tyrell Williams trade. He's going to be the Devontae Adams, I think, of this offseason. Who was it last year? Who was the guy that everybody was trading last year? I can't remember now. But Tyrell Williams, pick 1.08, pick 1.09 for Michael Thomas. What are your thoughts there, Nick?
I think it's a pretty fair trade. You know, Tyrell Williams, we don't really know what his future is going to be moving forward with Keenan Allen being healthy there in San Diego or wherever the Chargers playing next year. And 1.08, 1.09, you know, you're taking flyers on probably good players, but you know for sure Michael Thomas is a stud. He's proven in his rookie year. He's likely to be New Orleans wide receiver one moving forward. So it's a lot to give up for him, but I think it's a fair trade. I would give up that much for Michael Thomas.
Okay.
Yeah. It depends. You know, I think as I see it right now, I think the first five picks are the combination of Leonard Fournette, Dalvin Cook, in no particular order, of course, Mike Williams, Clemson wide receiver, Corey Davis, the Western Michigan wide receiver, and John Ross, the Washington wide receiver. I think those guys will probably be the top five picks. After that, it gets a little hazy. We'll see how things work out. And I should mention that our 2017 rookie ranks are hoping to be up January 17th. We're waiting till that point. January 16th is the last day for prospects to declare for the NFL draft. So we're going through and getting all the people that went back to school weeded out. So we're going to have those up for you very soon. And with that, we'll have a top 50 hopefully up to maybe a month after that. So hopefully we can shed some light on to see how that's going. But looking at the guys that went there last year, you know, it was like Will Fuller, Tyler Boyd, even Leonte Crew, who we're going to talk about the next pick. So, you know, just to throw some names out there for you, obviously Michael Thomas looks like the real deal. I'm always concerned with those Saints guys because Drew Brees, I say it all the time, but he spreads that ball around, and it's hard week to week to figure out who's going to score there. But Thomas might be the safest wide receiver there, and we just don't know with Tyrell Williams. Interesting to get your thoughts here, Nick. Josh Doctson for Leonte Carew, 2.07 and 4.07. What do you think?
I don't think that's enough for Doctson. I'm assuming the Doctson owner was just panicked because of the Achilles injury. So selling low definitely there, as Doctson was probably a top five pick in most rookie drafts last year. So, yeah, I think that's just too low of a price for a guy who he hasn't proven that he's a bust on the field yet. He just hasn't had his opportunity. So I would not give up Doctson for that.
Yeah, I agree there. I don't know how Crew, we talked about it, and I thought we would see more, but I just don't know how Crew's going to get on the field in Miami at this current time with two other young wide receivers in front of him. And who knows, you know, I'd like to know if this was an IDP league, I would understand that more because that second and fourth round picks are certainly a lot more attractive in that type of format. But, that's not enough to give up, like Nick said, a top five, in a lot of cases probably a top four wide receiver. Top four picks, excuse me, last year. So out of the top three wide receiver, really. But, interesting one here. And I've said interesting, I think, for all these trades. That's the word I say. Kelvin Benjamin and pick 1.10 for Travis Kelce. Ted Ginn and pick 3.03. What do you think?
I really like this trade as far as the side that picked up Travis Kelce. You could make an argument right now that Travis Kelce is the most valuable tight end in fantasy due to Rob Gronkowski's injury history. So, yeah, picking up him for Kelvin Benjamin, who really did not look the same this last year coming back from his injury, and a late first-round pick to pick up the guy that might be the top tight end, plus Ted Ginn, who's a nice bye week fill-in, and a third-round pick. Yeah, I love this trade for the side that picked up Kelce.
Yeah, I think Ginn and the pick are probably just a throw-in at this point. But, you know, Travis Kelce, this is only Travis Kelce's fourth year. He's 27 years old. Won't be 28 until next October. I know he didn't play a lot last week, which is great. But if you had him championship week, 11 catches on 12 targets, no doubt, 160 yards and a touch. Wow. I mean, I had him in a third place game, and I just was like, oh, and it was, of course, the Sunday night game. It was just like, oh my gosh, I wish I was in the championship because he was going off. Yeah, he was a very solid player this year. Had a couple weeks there in the middle with, you know, five and four PPR points. But he's, like Nick said, with Gronk's health, he's certainly probably the safest top safety right now. He ended so strong. I'm really considering using my one keeper, and my one redraft league is a keeper league, so we keep one player. I think I took him in the fifth. I'm really considering using that there because it's probably not a huge value pick, but I think feel like he's probably like a fourth-round player. And speaking of future ADP, I saw on Twitter yesterday somebody's already doing some mocks, and I feel like, damn it, I should be the first person doing mocks because I'm a dork too. But I saw the mock of, I don't know what the format was, but somebody was getting Cam Newton in the sixth. I would love Cam Newton in the sixth of a startup next year, don't you think, Nick? I mean, yeah, he had a down year. I would like to think they'll fix some pieces, they'll draft some offensive line and make that offense better, but I feel like that's a pretty good value pick right there for Cam Newton in the sixth going into next year, right?
Oh, definitely. You have to like his chances to bounce back. I mean, he looked like an up-and-coming player who was improving every single year up until this season. So, you know, hopefully this last year was just an outlier and his good career will continue starting next year.
Mm-hmm. Moving forward, ooh, prospect watch. I had Nick look at Baylor quarterback Seth Russell. He seems to be slipping to like the seventh round, maybe UDFA type of things. But let's see what Nick has to say about Seth Russell, Baylor quarterback.
Well, Seth Russell's got good size, 6'3", 215 pounds. He's got a very strong arm and good but not elite athleticism. So he should get a shot at in somebody's training camp. Like you said, probably a later round pick. Unfortunately, the last two seasons have both been cut short due to injury. Last year he had a neck injury, and this year broken and dislocated ankle. Also, he's coming off a down year. Only completed 54.7% of his passes in what is considered to be a pretty quarterback-friendly offense there in Baylor. So that's a big red flag. Although some scouts may write off this year, considering all the scandal-involved chaos that was surrounded the Baylor program in the last 12 months, Baylor's system also is not very good for developing pro quarterbacks, even with the numbers that they tend to put up. So he's probably going to be very raw entering the NFL, like a lot of college quarterbacks. Took all the snaps out of the shotgun formation. He's not used to lining up under center. And you look at a couple former Baylor quarterbacks, Bryce Petty and Robert Griffin. Those guys were both also pretty raw when coming into the league. And I know it's dangerous to do that. For example, remember all Jeff Tedford quarterbacks were garbage until Aaron Rodgers came into the NFL and shattered that myth. So, you know, it's dangerous to judge a guy based on the system and the school that he plays in, but sometimes that is a thing, too. Yeah, Mike Leach has a lot of prolific college quarterbacks who don't do anything in the NFL. So just kind of depends on your how you judge that. He's a very tough prospect to judge. You know, his physical school tools all but guarantee he'll get a shot to earn a backup job. But, you know, if I'm a GM, I'm not going to touch him before the late fifth round at the very earliest. But all it takes is one team to fall in love with the physical tools for him to go earlier. Just look at Buffalo drafting the ultra-raw Cardale Jones in the fourth round last year. The landing spot, of course, could change his fantasy outlook, but right now he's not currently on my radar in Dynasty Leagues, unless it's a league with a very deep taxi squad type of situation.
Or, you know, those two quarterback leagues, he's certainly worth a late-round stash or 16-team leagues, as we know. Quarterbacks are freaking platinum in leagues like that. But and one thing I've noticed too, just over the last couple of weeks here since we not had a show, when you're obviously the off season is starting and we're doing this rookie evaluation draft analysis stuff, don't get overly too concerned about size. I mean, Seth Russell, 6'3", 205. Of course, your first instinct is, oh, he needs to bulk up. He needs to gain 20 pounds to stand tall, strong in the pocket. Don't get overly concerned about that. Drew Brees, I'm not saying he's Drew Brees. Drew Brees, 6'209". Maybe he's 6 foot. I would like to measure him myself. Maybe he's 6 foot with cleats on. Aaron Rodgers, 6'2", 220. I mean, that's pretty medium size. You know, we all go gaga over these guys that are 6'5", 230, 235. But don't get overly concerned. You know, really look at their player and their skill set. Don't dismiss somebody from their size like I did with Jamison Crowder because he's 5'8". Look what he's done. You know, he's really just proven that his heart and his will is stronger than anything that anybody can that judge him for his size. So just keep that in mind as you're looking at players and doing that evaluation process here moving up to the draft. So C.J. Beathard, who I had the opportunity to scout this week, and I should have wrote down his size. see, 6'2", 194. Are you kidding me? He looks heavier than that. But anyway, so let's not be too concerned about size. That could have been a great segue. I really like his poise and his in the pocket and his willingness to run if there is space to do so. I think he stands tall and has and understands timing and how routes develop. His deep accuracy is very solid, and his slant accuracy is even better. He struggles a little bit hurrying passes over the middle with, obviously, with pressure. I think he's probably going to be like a mid to late round developmental pick, probably a career backup. You know, he needs to sit on an NFL bench for a while and learn from a guy. He'd be a great guy to add, I think, in New Orleans. Let him learn from Drew Brees and Sean Payton for a couple years. You know, maybe a late round type pick, because the instincts are there. I don't think he's an elite type of player, but the instincts are there for him to be a serviceable quarterback. And I think when you talk about people being serviceable quarterbacks, that's definitely sometimes startable in fantasy in a pinch too. So as I mentioned earlier, he had somewhat of an abysmal performance in a bowl game. He was 7-for-23 for 55 yards and 3 interceptions. So that certainly hurt his status, but got a lot of starts under his belt there at Iowa, and that's certainly a trustworthy type of player. Of course, wearing former Iowa quarterback Chuck Lungs, number 16, doesn't hurt either. But like I said, don't judge him for his size. Definitely a developmental project. I think he's a guy that could be a very solid player moving forward if he's given time. You know, he's going to have to sit on the bench for a while. Not a lights out type of player. Threw for 2,800 yards as a junior in 2015, regressed to just under 2,000 this year, but 17 touchdowns in both seasons, was sacked 29 times over the last 2 years. So not on the greatest team, but certainly a player that intrigues me, and a nice late round, like I said, developmental type of player for somebody. Oh, it's time for best number 47 there, Nick. It's been a while since we got – you know, it's been a while since we did the Dynasty Dilemma, and it took me forever to just, like, find a starting point with that. And I felt like maybe I went off in the wrong direction, but it felt good to do a dilemma. We didn't do those the last couple weeks as we were sitting start madness during the end of the regular season. But let's get to best number 47. What do you got for me, Nick?
Well, so this is a relatively short list. You know, I could have inflated it with players like Tyrone Wheatley, the former 17th overall pick, but I decided to keep it short and sweet. That being said, Kent McClown likely wouldn't have made this list if he had worn most other numbers, but as the Raiders cornerback, only played for 6 seasons from 1965 through 1970, but he was a first-team All-Pro in 66 and 67. Another player who only went to 2 Pro Bowls, Chris Cooley, was a big-time fan favorite in D.C. from 2004 through 2012, and is a very colorful personality who now works for the Redskins radio network. The cornerback Leroy Irvin is another 2-time Pro Bowler. He played 10 years with the Rams beginning in 1980 before moving to Detroit his final season. Okay, so I told you it was a short list, but it's also quite top-heavy with our top three. Starting out with Joey Browner, who was a feared strong safety for Minnesota from 1983 through 91, and also had played 1 year in Tampa Bay. Browner gets overlooked in that amazing 1983 draft class, but at the 19th overall selection, most of the years he would have been considered one of the best picks. 6 straight Pro Bowls from 1985 through 1990, and he didn't miss a game his first 8 seasons in the NFL. He was a big part of what is a very underrated defense there that Minnesota had in the 80s. John Lynch was another highly feared safety. He played 11 years in Tampa Bay and 4 years in Denver, going to 9 Pro Bowls and winning a Super Bowl. The former third-round pick retired after the 2000 season, and seeing that it's been almost 10 years since Lynch retired made me feel very old when I was doing my homework for this. I just had to share that fact. Now, Mel Blount went to less Pro Bowls than Browner or Lynch, only 5 Pro Bowls, but he also has 4 Super Bowl rings as part of that vaunted 1970s Steeler defense. In my mind, that gives him the edge for top number 47 of all time. He's got 57 career interceptions. That's good for 13th all time. 19 playoff starts is 28th best of all time. He was the 1975 Defensive Player of the Year and inducted into the Hall of Fame in 1989. Unfortunately, the Hall of Fame doesn't like to let safeties in, so John Lynch may be waiting for a while for his yellow jacket. And while that is unfair, Hall of Fame membership is, to me, a factor in the decision to name Mel Blount my top number 47 of all time.
Yeah, very good stuff. Like, I'm going to talk about a lot of the same people Nick did, but yeah, DB City, this number 47. Granted, got up Chris Cooley, excuse me. I started following him on Twitter recently. He has a radio show in Washington. Pretty funny dude. Try to get him on sometime. But like Nick said, Leroy Irvin, third round pick for the LA Rams, 35 career interceptions, 5 career pick sixes. Also took 4 punts and backs for touchdowns, including 3 in 1981. Ah, Joey Browner, man. Being from the area, being in Vikings territory, he was such a fun player to watch. Just a physical safety. Probably did a lot of things you can't do nowadays, but former first-round pick out of USC, ninth overall by the Vikes. He really was the quintessential just take your head off. Late 80s safety, 37 career interceptions, but he was really just one of the most feared hitters, feared for his hitting power. Everybody talks about Ronnie Lott, and we love Steve Atwater from that era, but Joey Browner was that same type of player, just a beast. Speaking of hitting, John Lynch made a tackle or two in his storied NFL career, 9-time Pro Bowler, just one of the fiercest players of his generation, maybe ever. And also, I thought it was interesting, Nick, did you see, I couldn't find any reference of John Lynch. I don't think he ever scored an NFL touchdown. So I feel a little bad that he didn't. I mean, his last year, they couldn't have put him in for like a 1-yard plunge. Come on. But never scored an NFL touchdown. That disappoints me. Maybe that's why he's not in the Hall of Fame. But anyway, no offense to John Lynch. But yeah, decades since he retired. Ugh. Ultra personal. I got to rep my South Dakota roots, but a guy that wore number 47 for the Detroit Lions, a fellow by the name of Wayne Rasmussen, who was a 9th round selection out of South Dakota State in 1964. 64 career interceptions, a couple pick sixes. Not only was he from my home state, but he later retired and lived in my hometown of Brandon, South Dakota, and his son, Casey Rasmussen, was one hell of a running back for my Brandon Valley Lynx. So I just wanted to mention Wayne Rasmussen, a former NFL player who lived in the same town that I grew up in. I thought that was pretty cool. But you got to give it to Mel Blount. I mean, you know how like they changed the mound in 1968 for Major League Baseball players, for pitchers, because pitchers were having too much success. That's exactly what happened in the mid-70s. They changed the rules about being physical with wide receivers because of Mel Blount. And anybody that is able to do that in their career, that's why he's a Hall of Famer. I mean, like Nick said, 4-time Super Bowl champion, Melvin Cornell Blount, 6'3", 210, really the type of player scouts and coaches would just drool over nowadays. He was the original big cornerback, 57 career interceptions, 5 Pro Bowls, 4 first-team All-Pros, voted to the 75th anniversary team, which is basically means he was one of the top 4 cornerbacks of the first 75 years of NFL football. And even though he retired in 1983, he was also voted to the 1980s All-Decade team. They basically outlawed bump and run coverage because he was such a tenacious beast. So not only did he, you know, was feared by opposing teams, but he changed the rules of the game because he was so good. So yeah, you got to give it to Mel Blount. Absolutely loved the way he played. And as much as I love Joey Browner, I think it's gotta be Mel Blount. So, anything else there? The best number 47. I think we got it.
Yeah, that's all I had for 47. But great point there on Bill Blunt changing the rules. Yeah, when you're good enough that they change the rules because you're that dominant, yeah, you definitely deserve a place in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, most definitely. One more question before we bring Chuck in, Nick, here. I just wanted to throw at you another thing we had in the Q&A. So potential quarterbacks on the market. I did not, if anybody's read this in the Q&A and be like, what about Tony Romo? Nobody is investing dynasty capital in Tony Romo. So just think about that, please. He's going to go somewhere for 1 year and then retire. But anyway, potential quarterbacks, no disrespect, but that's what's going to happen. Potential quarterbacks available via trade or free agency, Tyrod Taylor, Blake Bortles, Nick Foles, A.J. McCarron, Colin Kaepernick, and Jimmy Garoppolo. Who do you want the most, and fantasy-wise, Nick, where is the best situation for them?
Well, not knowing the landing spots, here's how I would rank them. Starting with Blake Bortles, then Tyrod Taylor, Colin Kaepernick, Jimmy Garoppolo, Foles, and then A.J. McCarron. Bortles and Taylor are probably the only guys I would actively pursue. Kaepernick and Jimmy Garoppolo I'd probably hold on to or try to buy low if possible or if I was desperate for a quarterback. And I'm probably not really interested in Foles or McCarron. As far as best landing spot, I think Jacksonville really jumps out as a place with very solid weapons to work with. Plus the weak defense provides some garbage time opportunity, as Blake Bortles owners are very familiar with. It's tough to see what will happen in San Francisco and Buffalo until they have the head coaching situations figured out there. Denver's another possible situation. You know, after missing the playoffs, John Elway may decide that they need a veteran signal caller to get back to the postseason. If any of these guys were to wind up there working with those weapons, that would be a phenomenal situation.
Okay. Yeah, I thought, obviously, it's all null and void now, but I thought Blake Bortles working with Chip Kelly in San Francisco would be interesting. And, you know, maybe Kelly's an OC somewhere, an offensive coordinator next year. So maybe he can look at that. And we know, like, the running quarterback is successful in that type of scheme. But I think just being mobile, and Bortles isn't afraid to do that, I think that could be an interesting marriage. And maybe since Kelly is available and Jacksonville is looking, and they're such a young team, I don't know if Kelly's going to get a head coaching job, but he'd be an interesting OC for somebody. I don't want people to discredit Nick Foles right away either. I think he's a player that could certainly go somewhere and do something. He's got three teams now, so he's got scheme experience as well. And he's got a great arm. He's just a great slinger. So I think if somebody would be willing to give him a shot, I think he could reward not only his team but fantasy owners as well. And I'm holding a couple full shares myself, so maybe that's just wishful thinking. But I think there's a future there. Let's bring in Mr. Chuck Podaisky. Chuck, are you there?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. I thought we were going to get to you a little bit early, and it's a little bit early, but then I started blabbing. Sorry about that. But anyway, how you doing?
Yeah, well, it's pretty much status quo then, right?
yep.
I want to say Happy New Year and Merry Christmas to everybody, but I think we did that before we left for the break. I'm doing great. It's a little cool out here in Vegas. It's only supposed to get up to like 56 today, and to us that's cold. Nick can probably relate to that.
Oh, yeah, that 50s, in the 50s, that's bitter cold.
But we have some interesting games coming up this weekend, and I can't wait to get into them.
For the record, -8 here this morning when I got out of bed. Anyway, go ahead.
Wow. No, I heard the North and the Midwest were in a real deep freeze going all the way to the Rockies, so I hope that doesn't – I hope that's past us here. What was I going to say? Interesting games this weekend. And I have an interesting thing for everybody to consider before they go putting their hard-earned money on these football games here. I read an interesting thing. There's a really, and it costs nothing to be on it. There's a great website. It's called sportsmemo.com. And sportsmemo.com basically is a bunch of handicap writers doing doing writings and things like that. Of course, there's the usual advertisements for, you know, subscribe to our service and everything like that. But they have some great information, and it costs you nothing. And one of the most interesting things that I read in the last couple of days is about the success of teams with a better strength of schedule once you come to the playoff. And let me get to it right here, and I will get that for you. Hang on just a second. I'm trying to click back to where I was. Here it is. Using strength of schedule to handicap the wild card round of the NFL playoffs. This is for the wild card round. Teams with a higher strength of schedule, in other words, teams that have played tougher teams during the year, are 40-15-1 against the spread. And 40-16 straight up. So 40-15-1 against the spread in wild card playoff games. So generally they're saying the team that has faced a tougher opponent will be successful against the spread. And then it kind of goes on to say that teams with a strength of schedule differential of 10 or more, in other words, as far as the rankings go, if you are 10 or more points above the other team, you're 22-4-1 against the spread. So it's a pretty strong thing to think about it, and something that can't be ignored when you do your handicapping for the playoffs, especially the wild card round.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. I mean, teams that have been tested respond well to bigger moments and certainly adversity. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and there's a couple anomalies coming up in this weekend's games, which we'll talk about. Are you ready to dive into it, Josh?
Oh, you're talking about Connor Cook and Brock Osweiler?
Well, that's the first game. First game is the Oakland Raiders at Houston. The Houston Texans are favored by 3.5 points, but let me give you their strength of schedule. In strength of schedule, Oakland is number 4 in the league in strength of schedule, and Houston is number 18. So there's that 10-spot differential in strength of schedule, but mm-hmm. You have to look at there's some other things we have to consider. So, Josh, it's your Oakland Raiders. Go ahead.
Wow, I just saw a headline that Bill Belichick offered Kelly a job after the Philadelphia Eagles let him go, so maybe that's something brewing there. But anyway, you got 3.5?
3.5 at the south point here.
Okay. Uh-huh. Well, and we do have the luxury of that these two teams matched up against each other. It was kind of a neutral site in Mexico City, and that was with Derek Carr, and Oakland didn't blow them out of the water. So I feel like that line makes – I spent a lot of the time, maybe just because Nick hates him so much, a lot of my time on this podcast defending Brock Osweiler. And I know he's playing my boy, so I'm not trying to get too personal, but it's Brock Osweiler, people. He's gonna give up a big pick six, or he's going to give them a short field here and there. So I feel like Oakland can win this game. So I'm going to take them, even though they're playing the rookie quarterback. I said to Nick, I don't even need to look to know that Connor Cook probably has more college starts than Brock Osweiler has NFL starts, or maybe Brock Osweiler has college and NFL starts. So I know Cook's probably has a lot more than that. So I can check on that before I just start blabbing my mouth. But I feel like, Cook showed something to me versus a very solid Denver defense and going into not a very good situation. So I believe they can pull out at least this week. Nick, what do you think?
Well, first off, I don't hate Brock Osweiler. I just don't think he's a very good NFL quarterback. I don't think he's worth $72 million, but it's not my $72 million, so I have nothing against him. I just don't think he's very good. I definitely don't think he's good enough to win a playoff game, even against a Raiders team that's down to the third-string quarterback. But like you said, Cook looked pretty good last week. And you know, really, I think this is a field goal type of game. So the fact that it's a 3.5-point spread, I have to go with Oakland to at least cover the spread, if not win outright.
Well, Oakland would be the would be the logical one to take here as far as the strength of schedule goes. But, you know, the strength of schedule doesn't take into consideration that the Raiders are starting a I wanted to pick the Raiders. I started out here trying to find reasons to take the Raiders, but I don't think their defense has improved that much, and that's how they're going to have to win this game is on defense. The one thing Osweiler does is he keeps throwing short passes. Oakland will probably be able to cheat up. I don't know if you guys remember when Indianapolis went into Denver and beat Peyton Manning in the playoffs. They discovered that Manning wouldn't or couldn't throw long, so they just cheated up. And every short pass that Manning completed, they were right there to make the tackle, if not break up the pass. They just weren't at all intimidated by the threat of going long. So that's one thing that the Raiders will have in their favor. The one thing that's going to make me pick Houston on this is the fact that the Raiders didn't seem to care very much after David Carr went down. They just kind of lost their team feeling. Now, Jack Del Rio is the kind of guy that can motivate a team, but I just don't see Oakland motivated enough. And, you know, the only hesitation I have here is Houston is -3.5. And so, you know, that hook may get me at the end of the game, but I'm going to go ahead and take the Texans here and go against the strength of schedule and just take the home team. Neither team looks like they're going to advance. And I know everybody's been saying this on radio, but I feel it too. Oakland or Houston, neither of them is going to have much of a chance in New England. So I'm surprised you didn't play We Don't Care on this, Josh. I'm going to take the... I'm going to take the Texans. Yeah, you. If it weren't the Raiders, right, you wouldn't care.
I suppose that's a fair point, but it's my team. What am I going to do?
Yeah, I know, and I'm going to take Houston and go against your team, even though I'm kind of going to be rooting for them, and I kind of agree with Nick on Brock Osweiler. You know, teams. There's been a lot of teams go to the poor farm, trying to pick up second string quarterbacks who had flashes of looking good off other teams. So I think Houston made a mistake here again. All right. The Detroit Lions are in Seattle to play, you know, against 12 guys. What's that?
Oh, I'm sorry. I just wanted to point out Brock Osweiler, 34 career starts between college and the pros. Connor Cook, 40 starts in college. Yeah, I know
wow.
He hasn't started a game in the NFL, but certainly experienced there from.
Well,
it was from Michigan.
He's from Michigan State, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. All right. Yeah, I was impressed with him in college, and I think he's a cool customer. But I think Houston got a little bit of a look at his tendencies in his game against the Broncos, and they'll be ready for him this week also. So. I'm just scared of the Houston defense. And probably, you know, everybody thinks it'll be a low-scoring game. I think the over-unders are like 36. So it's probably not going to be an exciting game to watch. I'm looking forward to watching, but not expecting a really, really offensive showdown.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, most definitely. All right.
You ready to move on?
That's right.
The Lions in Seattle to play a game of 12-on-11 against the Seahawks. Seahawks favored by 8.5 points.
Wow, 8.5 points. Ugh. You know, it was that one extra point. I feel like this should have been a touchdown. Maybe that one extra point is because of Matthew Stafford's middle finger, but talk about a kick in the shorts. You know, they lose Sunday night, and like, oh, so you lost, you didn't win your division, and now you get to go to Seattle to start the playoffs. wow, it seems like too many points, but I have a trouble picking Seattle, and they're the team with experience, and like Chuck said, they have that 12th man. I'll go with Seattle. I don't love it, but I'll go with Seattle and lay those 8 points. Is it 8 or 8.5?
8.5.
Woo! I'm still on. Let's go. Lay the 8.5. Nick, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I just can't pick against Seattle playing at home this time of year. You know, even with the 8.5 points, I don't like it. You know, if I was in Vegas, I probably wouldn't be betting on this one. But I have to go with the Seahawks. They're just too playoff experienced. And Detroit, you know, it's been how many years since the Lions made the playoffs or even had a winning record. So, yeah, I can't find a reason to go with Detroit. Maybe if Matt Stafford was healthy, like Josh alluded to, his middle finger is injured. But, yeah, got to go with the Seahawks.
Jeez, you guys just won't agree with me here, will you? Seattle, strength of schedule, Seattle was 30th out of 32 teams in the NFL. Their defense has not looked good the last 2 weeks. They haven't looked like the same team since their safety went down. Refresh my memory on his name.
Earl Thomas.
Thank you very much. Man, that thing left me a second. Yeah, since Earl Thomas went down, I think the Lions can score on him, and I don't think that if Seattle wins the game, I don't think they have enough firepower to beat him by 8.5 points. I think Matthew Stafford can put up enough points to be competitive in this game. So I'm going to go ahead and take the Detroit Lions plus the 8.5 when you're getting more than a touchdown here. The Lions, if you're wondering about the Lions' strength of schedule, they're only 25th, so it's not that much of an imbalance in strength of schedules. I just think Seattle is not in form right now, and I like the fact that, you know, even if Detroit's down by 14 or 21 going in the last quarter, they have that comeback ability to maybe get a backdoor cover on this one. So I'm going to take the Lions.
Okay. And how much does playing the Bears twice impact that strength of schedule?
Yeah, you just had to bring that up, didn't you?
Sorry to pull salt on the wound, but didn't you say they've never finished worse than 3-4 and 12?
Geez, I can't remember. They did this year, didn't they?
Yeah, 3-13. Anyway.
Yeah. Here's the good thing. Matt Barkley didn't look good in the last game, so at least they won't go into the off season thinking they have a quarterback. Maybe they'll address that in the off season somehow. Oh, another thing I wanted to tell you about. Last week I had a teaser, and my last game was the Lions plus 10 points. And so I went on the other side of it, and I did a straight up bet on the Vikings, on the Packers. And so I needed to hit, in order to win both my bets, I needed it to hit between 3.5 and 10. And when Stafford hit that Hail Mary pass, it took it down to, I believe, 7 points. So, you know, you talk about bad beats. That was a good win for me. I won both bets there. So,
yeah,
little betting story for you there.
Nice.
Let's move on to Sunday's games. The Miami Dolphins are in Pittsburgh, and the Steelers are favored by 10 points.
All right. Well, I'm picking another underdog here. That is way too many points. I know it's Miami in the cold, blustery Pittsburgh defense, whatever. Pittsburgh's defense is not good enough to be double-digit favorites. I know this offense can open things up and really kill you if it's a shootout. But even if it's a shootout, I feel like Miami can sneak in and not lose by 10 points. So I'm gonna take the Dolphins, and if I truly believe in one upset this weekend, I think it's going to be this one. I think the Dolphins. I will not be surprised if the Dolphins go in there and win. And that's just way too many points. Right of the weekend, I got to go with Dolphins. Nick, what do you think?
I agree with you. It is a lot of points, 10 points in a playoff game. But I'm still scratching my head trying to figure out how Miami is a playoff team this year. I know Jay Ajayi's had some really big games, but, you know, Ryan Tannehill and Matt Moore, that combination looks like Matt Moore is most likely going to be the starter in this game. I just can't find any reasons to pick Miami, really. I know they do have some offensive weapons, you know, good receiving core. Like you said, Pittsburgh's defense isn't the strongest, but I just think that at home the Steelers should run away with this one. Overall, they're just more talented of a team across the board.
Well, in strength of schedule, you guys, the Dolphins are 27th and the Pittsburgh Steelers are 11th. But I still cannot give up 10 points, especially after Miami already beat Pittsburgh. Granted, that was in Miami and Pittsburgh's bad on the road. I don't see that much of a discrepancy. I think Pittsburgh will find a way to win it. But the Dolphins are a gritty bunch. I think they'll keep it close here. And the strange thing is that 10-point spread probably won't be the biggest spread of the playoffs. It'll be New England against whoever they play next week. I'm guessing, you know, 13 to 14 points in that game in New England next week. But getting back to this week, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to take the Dolphins plus the points. I can't resist that. I know I'm going against the strength of schedule thing, but strength of schedule, I don't know how many 10-point underdogs that they had on that strength of schedule thing. So let's go ahead and take Miami, and we'll move along to the final game of the playoffs. The New York Giants are at Green Bay, and the Packers, it was 5.5 this morning. I just noticed that the line went down to 5, so we've got a lot of New York Giant bettors in here. So Green Bay, 5 points at home against the Giants.
Yeah, you know, I know the Giants have obviously Odell Beckham, and that's their big strength. But I feel like Green Bay will be able to shut just him down if they need to. Not shut him down completely, but at least control him, limit his production. And I just can't bet against Aaron Rodgers right now, especially with the history the Giants have going into Green Bay and winning in the playoffs over the last 5 or 6 years. You got to think Aaron Rodgers just going to have his team so motivated to do something. I heard Bucky Brooks say an interesting stat this morning. I think in the first 7 games, Rodgers had 10 touchdown passes. In the last 9, he had 30. So, yeah, he's peaking at the right time. And the Giants are a vulnerable defense, especially on the edges. And I think Rodgers and their speedy wide receiving core will take advantage of that. I just feel like you saw what the Packers did on Sunday night against the Lions. You know, the Lions were all probably keyed in and stopping Ty Montgomery at running back. He barely even played, and they used the rookie fullback Ripkowski. It's like they can adapt their play to whatever they want to do, and they'll do it because they know how to beat the opposing defense. So, long story short, I'll take Green Bay in this game and lay the 5 points. I feel pretty good about it too. There, Nick, what do you think?
Yeah, it's funny looking back to September, and everybody was talking, oh, what's wrong with Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers? They're a shell of them former selves. And, you know, now they're probably the hottest team going into the playoffs. So, yeah, playing at home, I definitely have to take the Packers. Also looks like Randall Cobb practiced today, so they could be getting him back after he missed the last 2 games. Makes that offense even more dangerous. Yeah, definitely got to go with the Packers.
Okay. We have no clean sweeps this week. I'm going to go ahead and take the Giants. I just I hearken back to the a couple of years ago, the Giants came into Green Bay and beat the Packers when nobody expected them to. I think they can do it. I think they'll play them a close game. The Giants' defense is playing as well as anybody lately, and even though they and the Packers' defense is not that great, I think it's going to be like a 21-20 game, somewhere around there. It's just going to be, you know, the Giants have enough to hold Green Bay from scoring the big numbers, and they have enough on offense to kind of keep pace with the Packers, whatever their defense gives them. So, plus the strength of schedule is in the Giants' favor here. The Giants are 13th, I believe. The Packers are 19th. Hang on, I'm going to check that real quick here. Giants are 13th. Yeah, the Packers are 19th. So the Giants have a little bit of advantage in strength of schedule. That probably comes with them playing in the NFC East and the Packers playing teams like the Bears and the Vikings. But nonetheless, I'm going to go ahead and take the Giants to stay within that. This was an interesting line. It started out as Green Bay -4, went up to 4.5, back to 4, up to 5.5, and now it's back to 5. So bettors are going both ways on this game. So no real advantage to be gleaned from that. New York Giants, I think, will maybe the Packers win it on a field goal at the end of the game. So there we go.
So, to recap, Chuck, you're taking 3 underdogs and Brock Osweiler? And that's why he's our Vegas expert.
3 strong underdogs. We'll find out when we get the results for this weekend. What about Clemson and Alabama?
Yeah,
Alabama is favored by 6.5.
It's gone down, huh? You want to believe after this being the same game last year that Clemson can turn the corner, but Alabama is just a flipping juggernaut. I don't know. I can't bet against them right now. The weird thing going into this, and I wonder if that's because of the line changes, Lane Kiffin's up to his old antics again and not going to be coaching this game. Now they have another guy, Steve Sarkisian, that's been around the team that's going to take over the OC duties, but Kiffin is not even going to be in the state, apparently, according to Nick Saban. So that could be interesting, but that I don't think it's going to matter because that Bama defense is just – they're just as solid as they come. Rock solid. So, Nick, any thoughts there?
I'll be rooting like heck for Clemson, just because I'd be rooting for anybody to knock off Alabama, the giant of among teams in college football right now. But, yeah, I'm surprised this isn't more like a double-digit spread. I think Alabama's probably going to run away with this one.
Okay, I'll take Clemson. No, Nick, like you, I'm rooting for Clemson because I hate to see a team dominate like that, and Alabama needs to be knocked off their perch a little bit. And they played last year. Clemson knows Clemson isn't intimidated by Alabama. I think it'll be a close game. I think it'll be a really, really fine game, and I'm looking for it to be somewhere, a field goal either way. So I like Clemson. I'll take the 6.5.
Okay.
I feel like I would have given Clemson a little more love if they would have had that traditional, month to get ready for this bowl, but it's a pretty quick turnaround. And I think that Alabama defense is better now than they were last year. So that's not good news.
They're really good. I can't
argue with you on that point. Yeah. They'll score a touchdown, and that'll be your 6.5. That'll raise that 6.5 deficit, I think. So, anyway, that is all we have for you today. Chuck, as always, thank you so much for being our man out there in Vegas.
Thanks so much, guys. I'll see you next week.
All right. Yep. Talk to you next week. Thanks. All we had for you today, Nick. Any closing thoughts there?
Well, a lot of times when head coaches get fired, there's a lot of he said amongst the former staff there, and it seems to be the case with San Francisco, whereas it turns out supposedly Chip Kelly wanted to draft Dak Prescott, and the GM vetoed that pick. So do you think Dak Prescott should maybe send some sort of nice gift over to the former GM there for allowing him to go to Dallas instead of being stuck in San Fran?
I did hear that, too. And what I would say to that is Dak Prescott would not go to San Francisco and be the same player he was for Dallas this year. He has a phenomenal offensive line, a stud running back. I mean, he's not going to go to San Francisco with that offensive line, Shane Droll, and Mike Davis, because
Carlos Hyde can't walk down a flight of stairs and not end up on the IR. So, yeah, that, I mean, nobody could have saved San Francisco this year. And obviously Chip Kelly was not the answer there either. So, yeah, sorry, Chip. But maybe he's an OC next year. Maybe that Josh McDaniels is from New England. Let's see Tom Brady run the Chip Kelly scheme. That could be kind of fun. But interesting dynamic, I should say. I do want to bring up Alan Satterley dropped a great article on Monday about if you're playing in any type of a fantasy playoff format and the players to draft. I think his format that he plays, you know, you all draft like 18 league, you all draft players based, and then that's your team for the rest of the playoffs. Just really solid, intensive work by Alan, who is some type of numbers analyst in his life off of the site. So make sure you check that out. He starts the article with a brilliant write-up about when one of the first years he started doing this type of contest and going into the Raiders-Buccaneers Super Bowl, Alan would have won the playoff contest. The only thing he needed not to happen was for Tampa Bay to score three defensive touchdowns. And ultimately, they scored one at the end of the third quarter and two more in the fourth. So talk about a bad beat. But, wow. But, yeah, great article by Alan. So make sure you check that out. We'll have the Q&A coming up this week. We're going to start with some stock reports position by position to get you – cozy for the offseason. Then we'll be hitting those rookies pretty hard. So make sure you check back the site of that and enjoy some NFL playoff action. Nick, as always, thank you for being my co-host, and we will talk to you next week.
All right. Sounds good. Happy New Year, everybody.
Yes, Happy New Year, and we will talk to you next week. And I don't have a dilemma planned, but I'm sure we will have a good one for you.
Thanks for listening to the Dynasty Bowl Podcast with Dickie, Gil, 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 Swagger, and Joshua Johnson.
Sign up, people.